fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
It's not easy being great, having to spend each day the color of the day.
I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, it is easy being green as we talk about the weekend's Midwest Renewable Energy Fair and this week's International Aquaponics Conference at UW Stevens Point.
Oh, yeah. Green can be cool and friendly life. And green can be bright like an ocean. I'm part like a mountain.
Today on Route 51, the focus is on the science of aquaponics, a water-based food production technology that some believe has the potential to feed a hungry planet in an environmentally sustainable way. Here in our studios in Wausau, we have Dr. Chris Hartlett, professor of fisheries biology and co-director of the UW Stevens Point Northern Aquaculture Demonstration Facility, and also a young man named Pierre Beauchamp, who is using aquaponics to supply fresh food for his high school cafeteria in California. Joining us live at the Energy Fair in Custer, Wisconsin, on the stage where Larry Mueller will be broadcasting tomorrow morning, we have Jesse Hull and Molly Stanek of Imagine Aquaponics, a Milwaukee-based company that will be demonstrating the technology at the fair this weekend. But first, let's get started with an overview of this year's fair. The Midwest Renewable Energy Association's events coordinator, Ellie Jackson. Ellie, how are you doing today?
Hi, Glenn. I'm doing really well, thanks.
Why don't you paint the picture for us, set the scene for us. What do things look like at the Midwest Renewable Energy grounds right now?
Well, this is the first time I've sat down all day, so things have been building from the ground up. We have tents that just came in, and all of our exhibitors are filling in their spaces. We have over 200 exhibitors spanning sustainability here this weekend. Workshop presenters are showing up, and we're starting to reminisce and see the same old crew and some new faces. So we're excited. It's going to be a really good weekend.
Well, this is your 24th year, is that right?
Yeah, this is our 24th annual fair. So we got our kickstart in 1990, and it was a much smaller event then, and we've grown now to a three-day event with over 200 workshops on all sorts of sustainable living topics and exhibitors and music and demonstrations and great keynotes. So it's a much different event now than it was back then.
And it just keeps growing and growing. How many people do you expect this weekend?
We're hoping for about 20,000 people this weekend, and that's what it's been on average for the past few years. So we're hoping to bring that many people here to learn that it is easy to be green.
And many people do not know where Custer, Wisconsin is, but it's very easy to find. It's on Highway 10, just a few miles east of Stevens Point.
Yep, that's right. And we do have signage out, too, and we have some wind turbines up and spinning so you can see us from the highway.
Tell us about the keynote speakers this year.
Sure. So Friday we have a man named Danny Kennedy. He is the founder of a company called Sungevity Solar out of California. And while solar installations aren't too unique, there are a lot of installation companies around Wisconsin even. What Sungevity is able to do is actually lease their solar systems to customers. That's unique and doesn't happen in Wisconsin. And so what that is able to allow is for people to pay, you know, a monthly payment like they would on their car or a mortgage, and eventually pay off that solar system and then make money, a return on investment for that system. So Danny's going to be coming and talking at 1 o'clock on Friday about that model and about the work that they do
Saturday. Is he looking at getting that established in Wisconsin? Is there some reason why you can't lease solar energy systems or is it just that nobody's done it yet?
No, that's a great question. Currently in the state of Wisconsin, it's one of those gray areas. It's an issue of third-party purchasing. And there is an organization, both the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, along with a whole conglomerate of sustainability organizations, including Renew Wisconsin, is trying to get a bill passed called Clean Energy Choice that would allow us to do that in the state of Wisconsin.
So it's Danny Kennedy on Friday night, and who's the other keynote?
On Saturday at 1 o'clock, we have Josh Fox, and he's the director of the award-nominated documentary Gasland, Academy Award-nominated And so Gasland really digs into the issues surrounding hydraulic fracturing for natural gas. And so he'll be talking about sort of that harmful technique, what that means to the environment and those communities around hydraulic fracturing sites, which does hit home here in Wisconsin as we have a lot of mining issues happening currently.
A lot of frac sand mining in Wisconsin,
correct.
So it is directly related to that. And we did a program on that a couple of weeks ago, and the number of frac sand mines in Wisconsin has grown from, I believe, 5 just a few years ago to 110 today, and they're online to get 170 of these operations up and running in the next few years. So this is pretty timely and pretty significant for Wisconsin.
Right, correct. And, you know, what we do know is that natural gas, no matter how cheap and efficient it seems right now, it is not a renewable energy, and it will run out, and there is no security in that. And so what we're hoping, you know, what we're going to hear from Josh is he's been traveling around the country and the world sharing his story about hydraulic fracturing and how clean energy really is the option, the sustainable and best option for all of us.
And, you know, I should, as a caveat, just mention that the proponents of natural gas say it is cleaner than coal, it's cleaner than gasoline, and that it could be sort of a bridge technology until we get to other more renewable sources. But you've got a lot of workshops going on, a lot of different categories, alternative construction and green building, community projects, educator workshops, energy efficiency and conservation, finances and economics, food, herbs, farming and gardening, photovoltaic systems, wind systems, solar heating, sustainable living, all kinds of things.
Wow, yeah, it sounds really great when I hear that coming from you. There's a lot of options and you know, something for everybody from basic information, whether this is the first time you're really thinking about trying to source local food or whether you have been growing your own food out of your garden for the past 50 years, there's something here for you. And there are over 200 workshops and they're 50 minutes long. And so our hope is that you're able to hop from tent to tent and learn as much as possible in, you know, 3 days.
And finances and economics is one of the workshops that, that seems particularly interesting with people who might be on a limited income who are wondering how they can convert some of their facilities to alternative energy production.
Yeah, definitely. We are talking pretty heavily about financing this year. Friday, there's a whole track dedicated to financing models and community solar models, and it's called our Solar Powering Your Community track. And what we're really hoping is that we can engage, you know, municipal and state employees, authorities having jurisdiction, lawyers, financial institutions, any solar stakeholder or potential solar stakeholder to come and learn about models of success for, you know, solar energy market trends and opportunities and make that happen in their communities.
Well, there you go. You've got an interesting tent called the Rainbow's End. Tell us about that.
Mm. So Rainbow's End is for kids of all ages, but largely families, and there's a lot of really fun hands-on projects for kids and families. We kick off on Friday with souped-up sandcastles and mud pies, but then we also have yoga for kids and families. We have workshops on how to make your own non-toxic paints and Play-Dohs, and then Saturday at 10 a.m., we have our Sunday parade, and all the kids can dress up and walk around and see the whole fair, and it's a lot of fun.
And you've got musicians who'll be performing?
Yeah, we have music starting on Friday and running through the whole weekend, pretty much all day. But some bands that we're excited about are the evening bands. It's always fun to, you know, go through a whole day of learning and networking, and then at the end of the day have some great food and solar-powered beverages from Central Waters and listen to the great music that we have here. So on Saturday we have Horseshoes and Hand Grenades and the Giving Tree Band, which has been broadcasting on some of the advertisements on Wisconsin Public Radio, so you may have heard it already. But there are a lot of fun, great dancey music, and it really completes the community that we build here for the weekend. You know, it's part education, but really part, you know, getting to know your neighbor and making those connections, because we all have something to learn and share. And so that's what happens here.
Yeah, and for those who didn't catch that reference, Central Waters Brewery is based in Amherst, locally owned brewery that has really pushed ahead with green technology. Big use of solar energy in terms of not only heating the facility, but actually in the actual production of the beer. And I would imagine you're featuring those beverages.
Yeah, yes, we are. Luckily, we have them as a good friend and an ally. And they were, you know, the first solar-powered brewery in the state and have become a model for a lot of other breweries. But delicious drinks, and they're here serving at 2 o'clock every day.
And you'll have a station for alternative energy vehicles again?
Yeah, we have our clean transportation show, and those cars are actually starting to pull in now. But we have some new models of hybrids and electric vehicles. So for folks that are just interested in checking those out, seeing what the new models look like, come on down to the clean transportation show. But there are also a lot of sort of do-it-yourselfers, folks that have converted their car to run on used, you know, cooking oils and can show you how to do that yourself.
Or can show you how to take, a hybrid car and convert it to just about 100% electric energy.
Yeah, we have a workshop on building your own electric motorcycle, and we also have a panel discussion on what it's like to live with an electric vehicle. You know, it's a concern for some folks because, you know, with a gas-powered car, you can fill up at the gas station, but what do you do if you run on electricity? And so these folks are here to show you and tell you what it's like living day-to-day with an electric vehicle.
And how many exhibitors do we have this year?
We have about 250 exhibitors, so, and spanning the sustainability spectrum from rain barrels to transportation to photovoltaics, everywhere in between.
Let me just read some of them, and I just picked these out at random to give you an idea of the diversity of people who will be at the Energy Fair this weekend. Culps of Stratford, Hippert Earth Shelter Homes, Gimme Shelter Construction, the Dairyland Power Cooperative, the Driftless Folk School, Center Rivers Farm Shed, the American Wind Energy Association, Conserve School, the Minnesota Renewable Energy Society, Northwind Renewable Energy, Northern Sun Marketing, Renew Wisconsin, Sustainable Fox Valley, Tomorrow River Charter School, Wisconsin Farmers Union. Those are just like 15 out of the 250 people that you've got.
We're really excited. And you know, the hope is really that attendees, folks that come to the Energy Fair, can take a workshop and then, find the right business to make that project happen. So take the 50-minute rain catchment system workshop and then find someone that sells rain barrels and talk to them about what that would look like for your backyard.
And in terms of admission, how much does it cost to get in?
It's $15 a day for one adult pass. If you join as a member, you get in for free. And if you donate just 2 hours of your time, you can also get in for free. And we do really rely on volunteer help. It takes about 300 volunteers to build and keep the fair running all weekend.
All right, Ellie, we're going to let you go. We know you're very busy, and you've got exhibitors and people and all kinds of things coming in and happening right now at the Midwest Renewable Energy Association grounds in Custer, Wisconsin. That's located on Highway 10, just east of Stevens Point. Good luck with the fair this weekend.
Thank you, Glenn. Thanks for talking.
All right. And when we come back, we will be talking about the science of aquaponics with Chris Hartlib of UW Stevens Point, with Jesse Hull and Molly Stanek of Imagine Aquaponics. They'll be doing demonstrations at the fair over the weekend, as will a young man that we've got in our studio, Pierre Beauchamp. He's a California high school student who's using aquaponics to help supply his high school cafeteria with fresh food. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrick. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, building the local economy and strengthening the community by making local business everybody's business. More about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
Wherever you're listening, if you would like to join the conversation, the number is 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. The subject is the science of aquaponics. There's an international aquaponics conference that's been going on all week at UW Stevens Point, and it's a major part of the Midwest Renewable Energy Fair this weekend in Custer. My guest, Chris Hartlib, a professor of fisheries biology and co-director of the University of Wisconsin Stevens Point Northern Aquaculture Demonstration Facility. We also have high school student Pierre Beauchamp from California. And joining us from the Energy Fair in Custer, Jesse Hull and Molly Stanek, the leaders of Imagine Aquaponics. That's a Milwaukee area company that will be doing demonstrations this weekend. So, Chris, let me read your biography. You're a professor of fisheries biology, the co-director of the aquaculture demonstration facility. You've got more than 20 years of research and teaching experience in fish ecology, aquaculture, and aquaponics. You teach courses on the subject at UW Stevens Point and applied research related to the advancement of aquaculture and aquaponics in a northern climate. Define aquaponics for me. What is it?
Sure. Aquaponics is really exciting because it is the integration of aquaculture or fish farming and hydroponics, which is soilless plant culture. And it's truly amazing when you combine the two together, you feed the fish in the system, and the fish essentially produce wastewater that travels to the plants and gives nutrients to the plants, and they in return provide cleaner water back to the fish.
Now, the first ever international aquaponics conference is underway right now at UW Stevens Point. Why UW Stevens Point?
Well, we actually formed a public-private partnership about 2 years ago. The university, along with Nelson and Pate Incorporated, which is in Montello, Wisconsin, and they're one of the national leaders in aquaponics systems and design. And they found that after they sold their systems, there weren't educated or qualified workforce to actually run the facilities. So they contacted the university and said, we really need college courses to train this workforce, these students in which there are plenty of jobs out there. So they contacted us, we worked together, and we then started offering aquaponics courses through the university.
Well, how complicated is this? It sounds like a lot of things could go wrong. Just speaking as somebody who's tried to raise fish in an aquarium.
Yep. Well, that's just it. It is. There is a certain level of complexity to it because you're culturing fish and you're culturing plants. And that's usually the direction that people come from, is either they're a gardener or they worked at a horticulture facility and now they want to add fish to it, or they're a fish farmer and they now realize, what if I added plants to it? So there is, I think, a level of education that you have to obtain to fill in the knowledge gap that you might have from raising the other group of crops in the system. Likewise, if you're new to it and it sounds interesting to you, then basically it's good to get some good background education before jumping in.
You've got conference participants from 9 different countries.
Yeah, it's truly amazing. You know, aquaponics is global. There are actually a lot of foreign countries that are far ahead of what we're doing in the United States. But the interest is worldwide. The same goes even for the courses. We offer courses at UW Stevens Point, and yet we've had people from foreign countries as well as throughout the United States.
And some of these are third world countries. You had a gentleman from Haiti or who works in Haiti?
Yep, we've had a person from Haiti. We've had registrants from Nepal, from Australia, Italy, and even Africa.
Well, a big problem in a lot of third world countries is global food security. How does aquaponics help ensure that?
Well, the nice thing about aquaponics is that you can do it locally. And this means that you can do it in your backyard, you can do it in rural or urban settings, which really means that you're growing your food locally and you know the source of it. You know, most of the food that we consume comes from worldwide. And it's kind of one of the scary statistics that about 1% of the food that comes into the U.S. is inspected. Well, if you can produce it in your own backyard, your own neighborhood, you know the source of it, you can go there, you can check it out.
One of the participants at your conference is the young man who's sitting here in our studio, Pierre Beauchamp. I'm pronouncing your last name correctly?
Yes, you are.
Pierre's, let me read from your biography. Your passion for growing food started in a home garden at an early age. You started building hydroponic and aquaponic systems in a home greenhouse at age 13. You've built 8 different systems, and you have designed and constructed a micro commercial aquaponic system at the Del Oro High School greenhouse, producing 60 heads of lettuce and several pounds of herbs each week in the school cafeteria. And you're going to be going into your senior year this year?
That's right.
Pierre, you awarded the 2012 SeaWorld Busch Gardens Environmental Excellence Award in the Educator Division, the first time in the history of the award that a student won, and you've also won second place in the United States Global Green International Citizen Entrepreneur Award. Congratulations, and good to have you here in central Wisconsin.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Give me your impressions of this aquaponics conference that you've been attending this week.
Honestly, I thought I knew a lot about aquaponics, and everyone that has presented has been able to teach me something new. And Yeah, it's just been great to be here. Yeah, just listening to everyone talk. There's so many people who've been at it for so long. Just the level of knowledge that I had no idea. You know, I just looking around online and stuff, you would have never thought that all these people had so much knowledge. And so it's been a great learning experience for me.
You're a student at Del Oro High School in Loomis, California. Where is that?
It's in between Sacramento and Tahoe.
Okay.
So it's right there in the foothills. Yeah, right now it's probably like 105 degrees there.
Why did they get involved in this? Or why did they at least provide an environment for you where you could utilize your talents to help them out? Was that a tough sell?
Yeah, I was able to get onto the agenda for a school board meeting, and that was 2 years ago, in January. So I gave a little presentation, put together a couple videos of what I was doing at my home, and at the time I was going to school at a different high school, 15 minutes away from the one I'm going to now. And they actually kind of recruited me. They said, you know, come to the school, and we have this facility, this brand new greenhouse that they had just put up. They had a rainwater catchment system outside the greenhouse, so it really tied into aquaponics, because aquaponics uses a very low amount of water to grow plants. And to have that system there was really cool, because I knew I could build a system that could be almost fully sustainable with its water usage. So next term of school came, and we decided to transfer high schools. So I went down there, and at the board meeting, I proposed this idea, a couple of drawings, told them how much it was going to cost, and they said, absolutely, raise the money to build the system, and we'd be happy to have it. So that's what I did.
Are you doing this all by yourself, or do you have help running it?
I have a friend of mine. He likes welding, so he was in the welding class the term that I transferred. So I contacted him, and we became good friends, and he liked what I was doing, and he said, yeah, let me help build some of this infrastructure. So I gave him plans for these tables that were going to hold the grow beds and the tables, and he built them all during class time in the welding shop. And my other friend, Hayden Tucker, he's been my friend since preschool, and so during the summer we would hang out a lot. And so I had him come down, and we would work nights in the greenhouse because it was so hot. And, yeah, it was me, Andrew Costa, and Hayden Tucker, and we built this thing.
Just three friends, and have you got other students helping the day-to-day operations, or is it just the three of you?
Yeah, so during school, I have my fourth block class is ag science, and so my ag science teacher kind of gives me some time off to go up there and work. And, yeah, I have a couple friends. Sometimes I choose people at random if there's any interest, and we go up and we plant and harvest.
So you're actually having this incorporated into the curriculum now at the high school. So it's become a tool for teaching about, I would imagine, not just aquaponics, but there's so many things here: biology, agriculture, science, mathematics, physics. All of that has to enter into it somehow.
Yeah, yeah. The ag science is definitely that's the biggest part of it, but there's definitely physics, chemistry. There's a lot of chemistry, actually, water chemistry. I'm learning more and more that's a very interesting part of aquaponics that people would not normally be aware of. But, yeah, chemistry, let's see, stoichiometry is really cool, because I just took chemistry last term, and we were learning how to figure out the different amounts of chemicals.
I don't even know what that is. Stoichiometry?
Yeah, it's the process. It's a linear equation to figure out the amount of chemicals that a reaction has when it takes place.
Okay.
So in an aquaponic system, fish produce ammonia, which is converted to nitrite, which is then converted to nitrate. And by testing the water, figuring out how many moles, which is another measurement of a molecule, how many moles of ammonia a fish can produce, you can actually figure out how much nitrate by volume, or not by volume, by mass, that's being created from that ammonia. And then you can figure out how much that plant actually takes up out of the water to grow. So you can figure out the mass of molecules that it actually takes to grow a plant.
And nitrogen, of course, is, that is the fundamental building block for plant growth.
That's absolutely correct.
And it's why we have things like fish emulsion as a traditional biological fertilizer. Well, let's go out to the Energy Fair stage to talk to our other participants in this four-way conversation, Jesse Hull and Molly Stanek of Imagine Aquaponics. Jesse and Molly, we understand you already know Pierre.
Yes. Yes, we met him, what's it been, a year and a half, 2 years ago?
Something like that. Yeah. I think it was about a year and a half ago that we first met Pierre. That was when he was still working on his home-based system, and we actually were able to offer some assistance in the early stages of developing the design for the high school, I believe.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not to take anything away from Pierre, he did 99.9% of all of that work. He's amazing.
They were an integral part.
So it sounds to me like there's kind of like an aquaponics culture out there. People who are into this in different states and different regions, and you share and swap ideas. It's really cutting-edge technology.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, there's many groups that have formed around this, people searching other people out, you know, desperate for answers. And a lot of times, you know, they need that answer right now. Their fish are hovering near the surface of the water. They need to figure out why. So there's forums that have developed. There's the aquaponics community that was developed by Sylvia Bernstein. There's Practical Aquaponics by Murray Hollum. There's several out there.
It's a fascinating connection over the internet, but that often leads to connections in person, because
Absolutely.
The interesting thing about aquaponics is it differs greatly depending on your climate. In our climate, in Wisconsin, most people are doing it indoors, because if you want to run an aquaponics system outdoors in Wisconsin, you need to heat a greenhouse, and that's often a little bit more expensive than people want to initially invest. Mm-hmm. So the challenges of running an indoor system are unique as compared to somebody out in California who's able to do it in an outdoor greenhouse year-round.
Well, an indoor system, you'd need artificial lights, correct?
That's right. Yeah, and that's one of the things that we actually specialize in. I worked as a beta tester for the hydroponic and the horticultural lighting industry for several years, and they would send me all the latest stuff. I would test it, usually be able to keep it, and then go from there. So we've developed a lot of techniques around which types of lights to use in different applications.
Do you use halogen lights or induction lighting is what I saw on your webpage?
We tested induction lighting for almost 2 years. Mostly what we've been doing now is focusing on high-intensity discharge lighting, HID lighting. It's the type that you see in gymnasiums or grocery stores. And we take those. They are by far the most efficient of the lighting sources that are out there that are readily available. You know, there's plasma and other such.
But readily available at a good price point for commercial operations as well.
Exactly.
Tell us about Imagine Aquaponics. When did you get started, and how has your company grown?
We got started... I was doing testing. I was playing with hydroorganics. I went that way because I was tired of dealing with synthetic petroleum-based derived fertilizers, and started working with that and taking waste from fish and rabbits. Molly raised rabbits, kept rabbits as pets, all kinds of things. And then that led me into aquaponics. You know, let's just put it all together. And it was already going on, and there was a lot of answers already out there. Then we signed on with Sweetwater Organics in Milwaukee, and we were there for a year and a half, 2 years, and then we broke away and formed Imagine Aquaponics, and we've been consulting and doing trainings across the country.
What kind of services do you provide for people, Jesse and Molly, people who are interested in aquaponics? Who are your typical clients? Are they businesses? Are they homeowners? Or do you have a mix of people?
A mix. I mean, one of the things that we've been hit with, especially in the last year, is that a lot of people got bit by this bug. I mean, you can tell by the people that are on your show right now talking about it, and when you go out and talk to people about aquaponics, they're very, very excited about it. Everybody wants to try it. But you get into the situation where $1 million into it, suddenly there's this big business, and you realize that there's a lot more to it. I mean, you talk about plants and fish. Well, what about insects, entomology, and you've got to know all of these different things that can take out your system very quickly. And so we've been asked to consult on several different farms in California and Florida. We just finished consulting on one in Texas. And we basically just kind of put them back on track, you know, and that's wonderful to see. To see those pictures come in, you know, 3 months after you leave, and they actually followed what you said and came up with their own ideas too. And we learn a lot from doing the consulting. We don't just get paid. We get rewarded by learning from the people that are actually doing the hands-on stuff on their end.
And what will you be doing at the Energy Fair this weekend?
We're going to be talking about optimizing fruiting and flowering plants in aquaponics. Pierre did a great job of describing how nitrogen cycles through a system. And because of that, what you've got is nitrogenous waste, which leafy greens, lettuce, spinach, kale, all of those types of plants do great with. The quickest way to get a 12-foot-tall tomato plant with very little fruit on it is to keep feeding it nitrogen throughout its life cycle.
They need the phosphorus for the flowers.
Phosphorus, correct? Potassium, all of those, and calcium. And so, you know, when I did hydroponics for several years, like I said, and you can actually dial in the specific nutrients and the timing to input those nutrients, and you can increase your yield, you know, greatly by doing that. Also, the flavor and everything. So, you know, why can't we do this here? Well, what I did was, what we've done is we've taken the idea of hydroorganics, hydroponics, and kind of combined it. What can we do with the fish waste? Can we take it out of the system and then create a new system next to it where we actually amend that waste coming out and either dilute it or leave it the same and then add other organic materials into it so that we get a system that can run, that can compete with, or in trials that we've done, out-compete petroleum-based synthetic fertilizer companies or hydroponic companies that are running on those fertilizers.
And I should ask Pierre, you're also going to be doing demonstrations this weekend. What are you going to be showing people?
I'm supposed to be doing a workshop on aquaponics, and this is an energy fair, of course, so I'll be discussing some of the energy efficiencies of aquaponics.
And Chris Hartlib, are you wrapping things up right now at the aquaponics conference? Is it going on again tomorrow? Or?
Yep, we have one more day, which is tomorrow, with a series of speakers that are going to be taking a look at things such as urban versus rural aquaponics. And then actually the kind of end goal of the first conference is that we're going to launch the International Aquaponics Society. So we're hoping that all those attendees at the conference will help form that society that really is going to focus on science-based commercial aquaponics.
An International Aquaponics Society.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you're going to start it right at UW Stevens Point.
Yep, tomorrow afternoon.
Chris Hartlib of UW Stevens Point. He is coordinating the International Aquaponics Conference. We also have Pierre Beauchamp, a 17-year-old, 18-year-old, right? Now 18, a high school student in California who is feeding his high school with aquaponics. And Jesse Hull and Molly Stanek of Imagine Aquaponics are joining us from the Energy Fairgrounds in Custer, Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. If you'd like to join the conversation, if you've got questions about this technology or ideas about maybe its implications for the food shortages, the famines, the global food security issues, particularly in third world countries where a lot of the land simply isn't suitable for growing things, give us a call, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. We'll be back after this.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the Stevens Point Area Co-op, supplying Whole Foods to Central Wisconsin since 1972, with local organic produce, bulk foods, and fresh baked goods. On the corner of 4th Avenue and 2nd Street, Stevens Point.
I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to talk to Professor Chris Hartlib of UW Stevens Point or some aquaponics pioneers, Pierre Beauchamp, a high school student from California, and Jesse Hull and Molly Stanek of Imagine Aquaponics. That is a Milwaukee-based aquaponics company. Chris, what's the history of aquaponics? Who came up with it? How long have people been using this technology?
Sure. Actually, aquaponics, they found records of it from the Mayan civilization as well as the Egyptians thousands of years ago. So the concept of it, of raising fish and plants together, has been around for thousands of years. I think what we're seeing now is kind of the modern movement of aquaponics, kind of more of a science-based approach to it, where you are working with, you know, all those factors everyone's been talking about, from the fish to the plants to beneficial bacteria to the water quality. And that's kind of, that movement's kind of been generated in the past 15 years.
Okay.
And is really peaking in the past 2 to 3.
Any great thinkers or great pioneers who helped generate the interest in this? Somebody must have come up with the idea of how we could do this commercially here and now in 21st century America.
Sure. Dr. James Rakosi, who was at the University of the Virgin Islands, actually is considered kind of the father of modern-day aquaponics. He's the first one who actually applied some scientific principles to aquaponics and generated much of what we see now.
What plants are typically grown? And Jesse, Molly, Pierre, let's just open this up to all of you. What plants are typically grown? What fish are best suited for an aquaponic system? What's the market potential?
A lot of the aquaponic systems are used to grow lettuce right now. And there's other add-ons to the system. You can have at the high school, I have a media bed system that's also attached to a deep water culture bed, which is just water, and that's what you use to grow a lot of your lettuce. And then in the media beds, you can grow a lot of your more hardier greens. So in there, I'm growing cabbage, parsley, cilantro, chives, with some beans, peas, so stuff like that. But yeah, the diversity is you can almost grow just as much in an aquaponic system as you can outdoors. I have not had very good luck with some of the rooting plants like carrots and potatoes. But other than that, it's very competitive with traditional agriculture.
Jesse and Molly, why don't you weigh in? What do you find people can grow and what can't they grow?
Well, we found that, again, what Pierre was saying, a lot of the plants that primarily use nitrogenous fertilizers do very well in aquaponics. We are actually working to move beyond that on a commercial level with our design for in the fruiting and flowering crops. So when you're talking about fruiting and flowering crops, it's the plants that are taken past that vegetative stage to the point where they're going to be reproducing and producing fruit, most likely. So we're talking about things like tomatoes, peppers, cucumbers, eggplants, things that you would, you know, typically see in the grocery store being grown by local farmers. Can also be produced by aquaponics, but just in slightly different modified ways.
Well, a tomato plant is a big thing, you know, so I imagine you'd need a support structure for it. There'd have to be some other technology involved for growing some things as opposed to just growing lettuce.
Yeah, well, luckily for us, there's a whole industry already that has figured out the majority of these answers. The hydroponics industry has already developed a lot of the answers that we need. We just need to adapt those and pull those technologies into an aquaponic culture system.
And how about fish? What fish are best suited for aquaponic systems?
Sure. Right now, currently, tilapia is one of the most favorite types. And the reason for it generally is that there's a market for it right now, so you can sell it and people recognize it. And it's also, I like to phrase it as a very forgiving fish. It can withstand water quality that ranges from somewhat poor to very good. But really, the potential for just about any species in aquaponics is fairly high. So you can try all different types of fish. I would say, you know, in Wisconsin, I've always been talking to people about things such as yellow perch or walleye or sunfish. Mm-hmm. Like bluegill in the systems. Really what you need to do is to kind of match the temperature requirement of the plant that you choose to the temperature requirement of the fish and make sure that they match.
And Jesse, how do you see aquaponics working in an urban environment like Milwaukee? We've got harsh winters, no farmland, limited green space for traditional gardens.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about a concept called controlled environment agriculture at that point. You are working mostly in greenhouses or, as in our design, a greenhouse coupled with an old industrial building that you've steward, taken over. And, you know, you can have a system where you've got the electric lights inside, the greenhouse on the outside. You can sink the heat from the lights in the summer and heat the greenhouse and the facility, the indoor facility as well, with that heat. We've developed a lot of ways of capturing that heat very efficiently. Which works in our favor because the light bulbs are so inefficient. So about 70% of the energy going to power that bulb, for instance, is converted into infrared or waste heat. Of course, it's only waste if you waste it.
Well, how expensive is the power just to run the indoor lights? That's got to be a significant expense.
It is a significant expense, but there are benefits that come to being able to produce, come from being able to produce a really consistent, high-quality product year-round. So what we're talking about doing is, in essence, creating a food factory that relies on a biological system for its nutrient source. The benefit, of course, like I said, is the controlled quality. We also have control of the environment, so the conditions that the plants are grown under are the same every single day of the year, which provides a really excellent quality product and, again, the consistency that a lot of producers would like to see.
Very correct. If you talk to a chef or you know, a regional distributor or anything like that, the one thing that we keep hearing over and over and over is consistency, quality, consistency of quality and the same product.
What about insect control? If you're growing things indoors, and I assume you're not using pesticides?
No. Molly should speak to that, I think.
Yes. In aquaponics,
because there are no natural predators for bugs indoors, right? So it seems to me like you could easily get an infestation of pests like white flies or spider mites, and they could just decimate your crop, couldn't they?
Yes. One of my specialties is integrated pest management in aquaponics systems, and particularly in controlled environment agriculture. And like you were saying, Glenn, you're right. There are no natural enemies of the pests in an indoor system. So you have to rely on proper scouting, which means looking for the bugs and finding them as soon as possible. And then oftentimes we actually introduce their natural predators into that growing environment in a very controlled and targeted way.
And bring in ladybugs?
Yeah, ladybugs are one of my favorites, but we also rely on green lacewings, a lot of nematodes, and predatory wasps. There are lots of fun options.
So Chris, are you teaching all of this stuff at UW Stevens Point?
Yeah, we cover everything, all the biological parts, as they've been saying. We go into integrated pest management. We talk about different plant crops and as well as fish. We also talk about, you know, the unknown crop, which is the beneficial bacteria that does that nitrogen conversion we were talking about. And then, you know, we go into the full chemical and physical systems, too, of how you can actually build it. And that's been one of the fun aspects of the course, is that frequently we have students who will email us or call us in between classes because they're actually building their system while they're taking the course.
Wow.
So it's really kind of interesting.
And, Pierre, I imagine, now anytime I've tried to do something new, it's always, you know, a process of learning, which means you screw something up and then you have to fix it. Have you had any disasters, any insect infestations, fish kill off, something like that you've had to deal with, or have you just been very good or very lucky?
No, I've never had any fish die.
Wow.
Yeah, I've definitely killed my fair share of fish on accident. But yeah, that's the way I like to learn, honestly. I just kind of build something and run it and see how it works. And that's kind of worked out for me in the past. So yeah, I do things, make sure it works okay. If it doesn't, you're obviously going to have some problems. And fish die-off is definitely one of those problems, and it's probably the first thing that's going to happen if your system isn't running correctly. And that's the price you pay.
Pierre Beauchamp, he's 18 years old. He's a high school student. He's using aquaponics to help feed his high school. We have Molly Stanek and Jesse Hull of Imagine Aquaponics, a Milwaukee area firm, and Dr. Chris Hartlib, who is coordinating the International Aquaponics Conference at UW Stevens Point this week. And Pierre and Molly and Jesse will also be doing demonstrations at the Midwest Renewable Energy Association Fair this weekend. We're talking about the science of aquaponics with Molly Stanek and Jesse Hull of Imagine Aquaponics of Milwaukee. Pierre Beauchamp, he is a high school student from California who's an aquaponics pioneer, and Dr. Chris Hartlib, who is coordinating the International Aquaponics Conference at UW Stevens Point. Let's talk about the whole issue of global food security. That's the subtitle of this conference that's been going on. And you have an international audience for this conference. Talk about global food security and why it's attracting people from all over the world.
Sure. I mean, it's a major concern. Most people don't know where their food comes from. And it gets imported into the United States. Other countries have to worry about importing their food as well. And that concept that you don't know where your food come or where last place it's been really concerns people. So the concept of aquaponics that in most cases it's grown locally really is appealing to people. It's also kind of timely. This is one of the areas where people talk about food biosecurity and what's taking place around the world.
And when I think of global food security, I also think about the global food shortages, the famines, the problems in third world countries. Is this technology perhaps the key to feeding a hungry world?
Well, in many cases it is, because if you can train individual families in those third world countries, they can have an aquaponic system at their home, and they can raise enough food in it to feed their family for the year. So this is very appealing to a lot of those countries, and we've had a lot of speakers at the conference talking about mission trips as well as missions that they've set up in foreign countries to do that training. And you can really do aquaponics low tech. You don't have to go for, say, the big cash crops. If you just want to feed your family, that was one of the things Pierre had shown us today, is that you can go to your local home store and you can pick up all the parts that you need, and you can build this system right in your own backyard.
Really? Pierre?
Yeah, I mean, that's the cool thing about it is you can really build whatever kind of system comes to mind. There's a couple of components that you need to add to the system. You need to have your water, you need to have oxygen, you need to have your fish. So there's these dynamics that if they're incorporated into whatever system that comes to your mind, you can build that system. And that's one of the things I started doing at my house is just building unique systems. I had an 800 square foot greenhouse, and I just started building separate systems in there, and I ended up with 7 different systems in there, and they were all different, all with the components needed to grow something, and I got all the parts locally. So, I mean, anything, any piece of junk, anything that you can incorporate, it's definitely doable.
So you think of a high-tech technology like this and something that's cutting edge, a lot of people would probably think that this is out of reach for impoverished third world countries, but what you're telling me is it isn't.
No, not at all. And again, they can use local resources to put their aquaponic systems together. And certainly if they go with local crops, both the fish and the plants, we saw a lot of presentations where people doing work in Haiti, a country that was devastated by an earthquake years ago, in which case over the course of a summer they were building a whole community aquaponics system for very inexpensive, and then they were training the locals to run it.
And Molly and Jesse, what's your vision for aquaponics in an urban environment like Milwaukee? What would you like to see happen in your home city?
Well, we would love to see a development like we spoke of earlier, a hybrid design of an indoor system and an outdoor greenhouse, harnessing the best of both worlds and feeding the weaknesses back in and turning them back into assets. We really feel like that could be a great solution to local food production year-round, giving people the option to buy local year-round will, I think, only strengthen that buy local habit, which is the best thing that we could do for all local producers. And we would love to see, more industries that can partner with aquaponics possibly be located around the same site. We have friends who were involved at the plant in Chicago where there was a brewery set up, and that mash was actually being used to produce power for the aquaponic system on site. Things like that. There are so many possibilities for great synergistic partnerships to come out of these things. Just like in aquaponics where the plants and the vegetables help each other out, we could see a lot of other businesses taking that mindset and really working together well.
All right.
Yes,
thanks.
Yes.
Thanks so much, Molly Stanek and Jesse Hull. We are completely out of time. Pierre Beauchamp, thanks so much for sharing your experience with us. And Chris Hartlib, you're going to keep us posted on this International Aquaponics Society?
Oh, absolutely.
And you're going to form that tomorrow in Stevens Point. We want to thank today's guests, Dr. Chris Hartlib, Professor of Fisheries Biology and Co-Director of the UW-Stevens Point Northern Aquaculture Demonstration Facility. Also, Jesse Hull and Molly Stanek of Imagine Aquaponics and Pierre Beauchamp of Del Oro High School in Loomis, California. Also, thanks to Ellie Jackson, the events coordinator for the Midwest Renewable Energy Association. Reminder, Jesse, Molly, and Pierre will be conducting aquaponics demonstrations at this weekend's energy fair in Custer, Wisconsin. which you can find on Highway 10, just east of Stevens Point. You can find out more about Imagine Aquaponics at imagineaquaponics.com. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger, remote production and engineering by Dick Madhouse, special music today by Van Morrison and George Harrison. Next week on Route 51, we discuss the battle over the Wisconsin state budget. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.